Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:25 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 27th. We had a pretty eventful day today. I thought, though, what was interesting is that a number of the shares that have been most heavily sold off have been among the best performers today, whereas Amazon, Netflix, Facebook, and Alphabet have been the leading decliners, or at least among the leading decliners on the NASDAQ today. Now, they weren't down an awful lot, but certainly some of the better performers were up in a very dynamic manner, and Tesla has also been up in a very dynamic manner. 10% on the day is really rather significant, but what it also helps to highlight is that Tesla is the lightning rod for risk appetite. And when we start to think about, well, what is going on here? Well, I think people are starting to come around to the idea that what is likely is that, I'm sorry, I just can't seem to type and talk at the same time, that we're going to have at least a partial reopening of a number of economies over the course of the next 6 weeks. I think that's been pretty predictable. And there is also the additional point that the consumer has been relatively less impacted by the lockdowns than corporations have, because of the massive influence of money pouring into people's accounts from unemployment benefits, from stimulus checks, from supplemental income measures that have been deployed in the USA, in the UK, and in much of Europe and all over the world. This has been a significant factor in helping consumers to get over the worst of it. One thing I can certainly testify to is that the initial shock of various places closing down, whether that was my club or then the loss of income that represented for personal trainers, for tennis coaches, for my children's fencing club, they all experienced an enormous shock, and lots of different people had their hands out in the early part of the month and also late March. But since the CARES Act was announced and also the promise of the $1,200 stimulus checks, all of those people looking for additional funds have stopped asking. So it's had the desired effect. It's definitely pushing more money into people's pockets. Now the big question is, what's going to happen when it ends? Because obviously the $1,200 was at least a once-off. Potentially it might be extended. The unemployment benefits, the additional $600 per week on top of regular unemployment benefits, will expire on the 15th of July. There are a very significant number of people, and we are potentially thinking, it is almost potentially that half of all unemployed people are probably better off being unemployed than they were when they were working. And that's a very significant number of people. We're talking upwards of millions. It could be even 10 or even 15 million people that are making more from unemployment benefits than they were from when they were working. Now, what is going to encourage those people back to work? Well, notification that the company that they worked for is open again and would like them to come back. Well, they have no incentive to go back to work until the middle of July, because that's when the CARES Act expires. So that at least is going to either put upward pressure on wages, or the government and the unemployed are betting that the lockdowns are going to take longer to unwind. But what it does set up is a moral hazard type of situation. That people are much more interested in being unemployed than they are from being furloughed, for example, or that they would much rather be unemployed than in fact be employed at their own, at their previous wage rate. They'd be probably better off to be unemployed. That probably is exaggerating the unemployment rate, because we can anticipate that some people would be lobbying their employers to make them unemployed, just simply on the basis that they would get a month holiday and get paid better for it. Well, what that is starting to do is to create perhaps a rotation in the wider stock market. So Amazon has now had two stabs on the downside. It was down $34 in here today. Apple was also, it is looking a little tired, but it was able to squeeze out an additional pop on the upside in here today. Now, when we then think about what's going on in some of the sectors that have been most acutely under pressure, well, then we can look at the movers on the S&P 500. So, for example, then we have Kohl's and Nordstrom, Gap, L Brands, Simon Property. These are all big retailers up in the region of about 10% in here today. Even Royal Caribbean was up 10%. So bargain hunters are starting to come into these shares that have had extraordinarily catastrophic pullbacks. That does not mean that they're going straight back up to their peaks. For something that is at $40 today, to get back to $120 would be 300% advance. Although Royal Caribbean has doubled in the course of the last month. And that is very characteristic of what we see among the shares that have had the biggest declines. They do tend to have some of the largest rallies right off the lows. But then that often gives way to a lengthier period of ranging, because it's not as if the issues that have assailed the sector have been completely dispelled. And that is going to take time for people to have the confidence to get back on a cruise ship, for example. Now, when we then think about what's going on in Europe, it really is all about the banking sector. And the banks today were in positive territory because the ECB is going to provide them with additional money so they can lend it. And Europe is much more dependent on bank lending than the USA is. And they need to continue to supply their banks with additional liquidity. It would appear to be inevitable that more portions of the European banking sector are going to be nationalized. And that's already a trend that's been underway for quite a significant period of time. The euro was in positive territory in here today, but it was not able to hold all of the advance intraday. And the more likely scenario is that we're going to have additional weakness in the euro. It has been trending downwards for over 2 years. And despite the initial pop on the upside back in March, it has given up the entire advance. And it really would need to sustain a move back above 110 and in a dynamic manner, and then hold it in order to question the potential for additional lower to lateral ranging. The very fact that we have got such strength in the dollar, and the fact that it is continuing to hold around the psychological 100 level, well, that's not so much that there's anything particularly strong about the US dollar. It's really a least dirty shirt type of argument that the other currencies that it is often compared to are in worse states than the US dollar is. They're going to be running very significant deficits, but that's equally true of just about everywhere else. The ability of the flexibility that the Federal Reserve and the US government have got in terms of their ability to print more of their currency, and not least because there is a chronic demand for it internationally, well, that is helping to support the dollar right now. But I think the most important thing to continually pay attention to is the yield on the 10-year and also the 30-year. All the way back in 2018, the 3% level was the very important region that it would have broken the decades-long bull market in bonds if the yield had been able to sustain a move above the 3% level. It didn't do that. And since then, yields have done nothing but contract. The most important level right now is 1.5%. And when we then think about the 30-year, it's probably more like 2%. And the 2% level and the 1.5% level respectively on those two charts represent the lower side of the overhead trading range. One of the factors that has helped to keep the US budget under control is the fact that interest rates have come down so quickly even as the deficit has increased. So the burden of servicing all that debt hasn't really increased all that much. And that is equally true of just about everywhere else, and particularly true of countries like Germany, where they continue to enjoy negative yields on their debt. So they're being paid to issue debt in Germany. Well, obviously that's a rather odd situation. It's the kind of contradiction that arises at the top of every major market. The fact that we now are in a period of monetary financing, that does suggest that we're at a rather dangerous environment for bonds, because with wage growth potentially going to get a boost from the very generous unemployment benefits that have been made available, well, that's highly inflationary. And against a background where we have governments that are becoming over-indebted at an accelerating rate, then those are two factors that could contribute to inflationary pressures in the medium term. It's not really a risk in the short term, but the more that the stock market continues to recover, the greater the likelihood is that it's going to create inflationary pressures. Now, we are not out of the woods just yet with the majority of stock markets. The S&P 500 has rebounded back above its 1,000-day moving average. It is rapidly unwinding the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average, and that's right around the 3,000 level. It's going to have to sustain a move above 3,000 in order to confirm a return to medium-term demand dominance. And we have short-term overbought conditions evolving right now, and there is the clear potential that we're going to see some resistance encountered around the 3,000 level. And considering how quickly the market has rallied back up off the lows, there is obviously a great deal riding on the ability of economies to open back up again. We're certainly getting sporadic instances of good news. New Zealand, for example, has declared that they are now coronavirus free. So that's really quite positive from a domestic perspective. Of course, the only way they're going to retain that title of being the first country to be coronavirus free is to continue with the lockdown of international travel. But the New Zealand 50 has got right up to test the 200-day moving average, and it had been trending in such an incredibly impressive manner all the way through the last decade that this is an enormously important area where it needs to be able to push back up and above. It's the first area of potential resistance, considering the massive reaction we've had against the prevailing trend. I think this is a good example of what we can probably anticipate. It's really very likely that we're going to get periods of right-hand extension on a significant number of markets. Once they've unwound oversold conditions or rebounded in a short covering rally, then the temptation for people that were able to buy at the low to take some profits will increase. Those who failed to sell on the downside will be looking at an opportunity to get out without having sold at the low. Traders will be a little bit more reticent to put on bigger positions following an impressive rebound. Those who have been looking to short will use it as an opportunity to initiate short positions. So there are a number of different people that will be looking at these particular areas around the 200-day moving average as trading opportunities. On the other side of the equation are the fund managers who will be reweighting out of bonds and into more of an equity weighting, simply because bonds have done so very well that they will have to reweight. And particularly as we come towards the end of the month, we will see some reweightings that could potentially be positive for stock markets. We might already be seeing that kind of action coming through right now. It's really a question then of what happens after that. And particularly when we look at some of the other markets. Well, for example, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ have been among the best performers. Mid-cap and small-cap sectors have had some of the biggest declines and some of the least impressive rebounds, although the FTSE 250, for example, has been relatively steady. Then when we look at the wider Eurozone area, the Eurostoxx index has got an almost identical chart pattern and has also got this little sequence of ranges, one above another. The sector that is most under pressure right now remains the oil market, and West Texas Intermediate was down $4 in here today. We've had extraordinary volatility, but what's happening right now in terms of the U.S. oil fund is particularly noteworthy, because they've had a predictable roll schedule on their holdings of futures for most of the last decade. And you do need to look at it on a longer term basis to really grasp how much it has underperformed the oil price over the course of the last decade. And the entire reason for that is because of the losses it takes on its roll schedule. And you're seeing the clear influence of the contango losses on oil prices coming through in the price of this fund in very graphic detail. And what they're currently doing is liquidating all of their exposure to the June contract, because they do not want to be in a position where they're left with over 100,000 contracts on the last day of trading and prices go to negative $40 again. But traders are front running this decline, because everybody knows that the US oil fund is liquidating its position. So that is putting downward pressure on West Texas Intermediate. Now, when we look at Brent crude, it's only down $1.50. It never went negative. So that really does help to, I think, further emphasize the point that this is a very particular issue to do with West Texas Intermediate. It's obviously a rather difficult time for the oil market generally. There is a dearth of storage facilities. There are still a number of different countries and regions that are producing with nowhere to sell it, and the global economy has really ground to a halt, so there's no demand. That is likely to continue to represent downward pressure. But the US oil fund has generally been representative of about 25% of the open interest in West Texas Intermediate. There is the clear potential that that fund is going to close. That would potentially then represent one last big liquidation of positions. And after that, then there would be no more forced sellers, or there would be a significantly reduced number of forced sellers. And from that point on, it's possible for oil prices to recover. And when we look at just how oversold this market is and how cheap it is on both a relative and an absolute basis, then there is potential for oil to bounce in here. in just the same way that any of the very oversold markets could also bounce. It's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that oil prices could double in exactly the same way that it's possible for Royal Caribbean to double and still be in a bear market. And with prices today for Brent at $19, it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that they could get up to $40, even $60. But after that, it becomes much more difficult, because it's not simply that we have a massive source of supply, but that there are significant questions about medium-term demand growth, because renewables are becoming progressively more competitive with oil. They are also green, so they're getting more political backing. They solve for the question of national security, which is something that is becoming progressively more important. And these are, I think, some of the more significant factors. When we think about some of the countries that are big consumers of oil, well, Japan is certainly one of those. And the Nikkei is now right in the region of the 20,000 level. Now, if it can push back up into the overhead range, then we'll be looking at a failed downside break and the potential for the recovery to gain momentum once more. But we are at a rather interesting juncture right now. And the second section index has got a similar pattern to a lot of the other mid-cap and small-cap sectors internationally. They have not bounced to nearly the same extent as some of the larger cap sectors, and not least because it is smaller cap companies are going to have a harder time coming back from the lockdowns and the economic contraction that we've been presented with. With a little bit better, or I guess more enthusiasm for risk appetite in stock markets, gold was a little softer in here today. It's still, however, holding the $1,700 area, and it looks like a medium-term demand-dominated environment. Silver is pausing around the $16 level, and platinum hasn't really yet been able to sustain a move back above the $800 level. Palladium was in negative territory. This does look like the end of a bull market. And having had the big decline and subsequently the very impressive rebound, it is now giving up some of that. And again, this is another example of a trend that had rallied spectacularly and then rebounded very impressively, and then subsequently is going to have a much more volatile trading environment. And I think that that is potentially what we're going to see in a number of stock markets. Then when we think about a country like India, it has got the big benefit of having a young population. It has got the, the headwind of having an underdeveloped healthcare system. The performance of the Nifty looks quite similar to a number of the other charts we've just looked at. I think investment in India from a foreigner's perspective is going to be influenced by how well the rupee can hold its lows. And so far it has been reasonably steady, but we don't really see anything in the way of dynamics to conclude that this is more than a short-term low. When we think about the Brazilian real, then it has also been trending lower, and this is another upward dynamic in favor of the dollar in here today. The Brazilian stock market is starting to steady in here, and it was up nearly 3,000 points in here today. So it is holding the sequence of higher reaction lows, but that is being flattered significantly by the weakness of the currency. When we look at an ETF, then we can certainly see that Brazil has sold off really quite aggressively, and it may certainly have bounced, but it has got a lot of work to do in order to demonstrate that this is anything more than a short-term low. So we're still at a rather difficult time for a number of the emerging markets. Even though there are some countries have done better than others, and Vietnam is certainly one of those examples. They have been able to really very successfully contain the risk from the spread of the virus. But that's not so much true of their customers and the countries they do business with. So we're definitely seeing that some good news is coming through with regard to the coronavirus, and the end of lockdowns is certainly positive. But the other point is that this is a rolling wave of infections going around the world, and some countries are much better able to deal with it than others. And we're not really going to have an end to the lockdowns and the beginning of international travel again until we see a much bigger decline in the number of cases. So that is probably going to fall heavier on the emerging markets than it does on developed markets. So there is certainly value being accreted in the emerging markets. There are going to be, I think, really quite attractive valuations and longer term investment opportunities. But we're still going to have volatility until we see that there is some clear indication that the problem has been got under control in these countries. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.